I don't need good looks to sell no car or beer, TVs or new machines. Oh, all you common can hang up your schemes. Pimps and hustlers put up the Vaseline.
Hi there. Hi there, everybody. This is Armand DeMille with Roberta Maria Atti.
Hello, everyone.
Hello, Roberta. How are you?
Hi, Armand.
I think we're on air now.
Yes, I think so, too.
Let me have that for a moment.
It's a nice thing to be on air.
Say hello, Roberta.
Hello, hello. Hello, everyone.
We're on.
So we have a nice program for you guys today, even though we're starting a little bit late. Technology is wonderful when it works, and when it doesn't, it can be frustrating, but thank God that we have it. We are here, and we're here to stay, to give you a program about behavior. Yes, we got such great response last week, and you know, we didn't even know that Sean Ellis was going to be on Monday, the National Geographic special about the man among wolves. It came to me as a surprise that after we did that program about alpha and beta behavior, and we said some pretty innovative things there, well, then I heard that Sean Ellis was going to be on. He was going to be featured in a special by the National Geographic. Sean Ellis is a wolf expert who has been living among the wolves. He lives as a wolf. And in the program, in the show, he actually explained a lot of things about wolves' behavior that confirmed what Armand and I were saying. But his came from direct experience.
Hey, this is Armand DeMille with you, with the positive mind. Thank you so much, Roberta Maria Atti.
You're welcome.
You know what I would say?
I was on a roll there.
You were on a roll. Practicing our wolf behavior.
Mm-hmm.
Let me tell you why we talk about wolves.
Mm.
We talk about wolves because by studying wolf behavior, we understand a great deal about human behavior. Because wolves are social animals.
Mm-hmm.
Wolves are family animals.
Yes, we have a lot in common with them.
Right? So I strongly suggest what Roberta was talking about was on the, if you get the National Geographic channel on TV, but you could also get a good piece of it by looking up National Geographic on the website.
Yes. If you go to the National Geographic website, which is easy to find through Google, then you go to the site called menamongwolves.com, and Sean Ellis's website will come up. And on that website, there are three interviews with him. Each one of them is about 8 to 10 minutes long, about howling, about growling, about whelping. There's a lot of information there.
What we take from this today, very specifically, is about behaviors. So first we want to complete something about the alpha, beta, and omega male. Let's just complete that. In case you didn't tune in last week, I feel like I have to catch up. I have to talk faster because we started 15 minutes late.
I hear you.
I have to talk faster, okay? the alpha male or alpha female. It's like a family. The wolf pack is a social unit. The pack consists of pairs, brothers, sisters. But the parents are the alphas.
The pack, in a pack of wolves, the parents are usually the alphas because only the alphas reproduce.
Now, the alpha doesn't have to be a male. The alpha could be a female. The leader of the pack can be an alpha male or an alpha female.
In fact, last week, Armand and I described the alpha role in a community, not so much as the dominant role, but as the role of leadership. And so the leader, even though the leader is the one who gets the first choice of the kill and gets to eat the best organ meat, the most nutritious, and is the one who gets the respect of every other member in the group, but the leader is not the strongest member, or not always, anyway.
Well, you see, now that's confusing. He is, or she is, the strongest member. Maybe not the biggest member. Maybe not the physically strongest. But strongest in as much as they rule the pack.
Okay, you see, Armand, I think that in any community of anything, whether it's a community of wolves or humans or monkeys or cells, in any community there has to be an organizing dynamic that keeps the community from falling into chaotic confusion. And that's the role of the leader.
Right.
So the leader doesn't have to be the strongest. The leader has to be the one who is able to keep the group together, working together, functioning together, keeps the group from scattering, keeps the group in line, in order. And so the leader has to be the strongest in the sense that he or she is able to command obedience.
That's right.
By the others. But he or she does not do so through sheer muscles.
Right,
strength.
They could have arthritis.
Exactly.
As long as they have a good will.
In fact, I've known of animals that had been seriously wounded to the point where they could no longer walk or vocalize, and they were still the alpha.
Right. Okay, so we're not arguing about this. The alpha is the head of the pack. The head of the pack, in as much as they get the first choice of everything, nobody really defies them. Those that defy them got to take them on. The alpha could be a male or a female. Now, just so you should know, the term alpha was coined in 1974 by Rudolf Schenkel, a Swiss animal behaviorist. He said the alpha male usually controls the activities of the other wolves in the pack, but occasionally a very strong female who has usurped control from him may be an alpha female. The pack structures benefits wolves greatly in places where they may act unrestricted in human beings. So there is a power in number where when a pack alpha is there, there is generally some kind of recognition and acknowledgement. Now, second, not contrary to what I thought, a beta male or female is not everybody else. The beta male or female is the second in command, usually the strongest. But they are the one who is, they're ready to replace the current alpha or current alpha male or female. Of the same gender, by the way.
Yes, well, usually in the structure, what you'll have is a pair of alphas, male and female, who reproduce regularly, and the offspring are all of the whelps of the alpha male and female. But the beta male and female will continuously try to challenge their status in terms of attempting to gain alpha positioning by attempting to mate with the alpha of the opposite gender. So the alpha male, the beta male will try to mate with the alpha female, and the beta female will try to mate with the alpha male. And this is, of course, behind the back of the alpha same gender. And that's what could engender fights
yeah, and
to
not
the death.
But not necessarily, because in humans, you know, we're really talking about humans. We're using wolves to try to bring you to the behaviors of humans. a beta human. An alpha human would be your president of the United States.
Well,
I mean, no, but a designated leader, you know what I mean? And certainly seems to be able to do anything he wants to do. I hate to think of him as an alpha, gives alphas bad names. However, is the head of the pack. You know what I mean? He says, let's go do this, and we seem to just follow.
Well, we could get into a long debate about that. But
listen,
then he's got
Cheney is kind of, I guess, the beta, because even though Cheney may not challenge him for the rule, Cheney is ready to take over. Now, that's what the real description of a beta is, ready to take over the first position. So even though he may not directly challenge, but they usually do, they challenge and test. You know, they kind of, the beta male will kind of see how strong the alpha male is. And if the alpha male is strong enough, the beta male backs off and says, not today, maybe tomorrow.
So the alpha male actually is always on guard in a sense, because he knows that the moment he's going to let go a little bit, there could be a beta who is ready to take over.
Right. And on the other hand, the alpha male needs the beta because the beta keeps the alpha muscular. It keeps him kind of working out, you know. Otherwise, he would go on vacation on his ranch in Texas,
mm-hmm,
and stay there. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
He needs to know there's somebody ready to take my place. You know, Don Imus on radio had to keep his radio alert and alive because it was very easy to replace him.
Mm-hmm.
Very easy. And he knew there's somebody waiting to take my spot. And radio people, almost all actors and actresses, everybody's aware of it. Everybody who gets to the top realizes there's somebody strong ready to take my spot. That's the beta. There are not many betas. There are not many betas. In human society, you may be an alpha or you may be a beta if you're ready to step up to leadership. But most are not. There's usually only one alpha and one beta. And the alpha and the beta are not enemies because the beta helps control the pack as well. Because nobody,
actually,
you know.
Usually the beta is the one who takes on fights with stranger wolves or humans.
Or even, the beta within, is the, even the, within the pack. Let's say that there's food time and they have, you know, they caught a gazuma to eat. And
what's a gazuma?
I don't know, but I just don't like saying deer. And they're about to eat a gazuma. And they have a gazuma, and the alpha male gets, you know, the heart, the liver.
And the brain.
Right? This is the good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And the beta male is there getting, you know, eating the other stuff. But if any of the other subordinate males or subordinate animals come along, the beta says, no, you don't. You wait till I'm finished. So the beta male is really fighting off the hungry pack.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the rest of the pack is called subordinates. And we think about this as humans. There's going to be a leader. There's going to be a ready to take over the leadership. And then the rest of us are subordinates, if we're not one of those.
And then there's the omega.
And then there's the old omega.
And the omega in humans is a little bit tricky to define without falling into stereotypical descriptions. And we're going to try to do the best we can not to do that, but it's almost inevitable. An omega is actually a very necessary role in any community.
Well, let's define what it is first. It's the lowest.
An omega is the lowest in the sense that he's almost the recipient of everyone's frustrations, of everyone's shadow, if we were talking about humans. He's this scapegoat.
The scapegoat, the punching boy.
And also the one who is most nervous, most jumpy, most what we would call scaredy cat, even though it's a wolf.
The omega wolf is a male or female at the bottom of the hierarchy. The omega wolf is usually the last to feed at the site of a pack kill. The omega seems
to be, or sometimes does not feed.
Doesn't feed at all. When the omega is in a particularly grouchy mood, when the alpha is in a grouchy mood, he may just keep the omega from eating at all. And the omega plays an important role because you're right, it acts like a social glue, allowing frustration to be vented, you know. And when you think about some of us who act as omegas, you know, if you hire somebody, maybe that's what slavery was.
Well,
the idea of having somebody
Well, I think that then that leads us into a definition of behavior, but there was something I want to bring up regarding omegas. One time I was in Penn Station, and there was a homeless person sleeping on the ground, and a bunch of police officers came over to tell him to get up and leave. And he got up, and he was a little bit, you know, complaining that he didn't like the treatment particularly. And these officers became very aggressive towards him, even though he didn't have a weapon on him, and he was obviously not going to be able to take them on. So they were venting their frustrations on him. It's almost like he became the recipient of their negative feelings.
Sure.
Now, there are people in our society, unfortunately, who willingly,
subconsciously, they
get there, but they get there.
It's like they have a sign on their back that says, kick me.
And they may not be bothering anyone. I remember that video that went all over the internet during Katrina. There was this one man who was just standing on the main street there, Bourbon Street, and he was not doing anything, but he was just standing. And all of a sudden, a bunch of policemen on horses, somehow they got to him and they started beating him up. You know, how does that happen? How does that behavior happen in a group? What you're seeing
how
there...
How does it serve the group?
How does it serve the group? What you're seeing there is exactly the behavior of a frustrated alpha, beta member versus an omega. The omega is not aggressive, not challenging, not doing anything particular, but somehow he or she gets this wrath. Triggers this wrath.
Now, many of you may consider yourself to be dish rags. You know, the givers of the world, the people who give. But there's something we've learned about the Omega Wolves. The Omega Wolves can fight themselves up to actually becoming the Alpha Wolf.
Yes, they can.
They can fight themselves up the rank. You know, through psychotherapy, an Omega Wolf goes into treatment.
Through good nutrition, too.
And good nutrition. And he says, hey, what shall I eat? And how do you feel about your father? And the Omega gets a little more power. And he decides, hey, wait a minute. No, buddy, you're not going to get me this time. You're not going to kick sand in my face. I'm going to go weightlifting. And so the Omega slowly challenges each wolf and eventually will get to a point, although it's quite remarkable if it ever happens, when an Omega becomes an Alpha. It's just an amazing thing. It's an amazing story to watch this happen. Now, this leads us to a discussion. We wanted to give you this information, and we want to recommend to you that there be a time that you look at the National Geographic Channel and try to get a recording, if you can, TiVo it or something, of the next time the show is on. What was the show called?
A Man Among Wolves.
A Man Among Wolves. See that, because there's stuff in it, stuff in it that teaches you stuff. But now where it takes us.
Well, you know what,
Armand? It takes us into understand. Yes, Roberta.
We realized that we never really gave an explanation or a description of what behavior, what we mean with the word by the word behavior.
Well, that's where we're going. Absolutely.
And when we talk about alpha behavior, beta behavior, all these behaviors, one might wonder, well, you know, where does it come from? Where does a behavior come from? Does it come from thinking? Does it, you know, do you think yourself an alpha or an omega? Do you feel that way? Okay, so let's go into definitions of what behavior is and how we understand it when we work with it.
Because one of the beautiful things about understanding the animal world and one of the beautiful things about studying ourselves in earlier incarnations is to understand the workings of the human mind as well and our own mind, you know. Behaviors. Now, what is a behavior? A behavior is defined as an action or reaction of a person or an animal in response to an internal or an external stimuli. I'm going to repeat that. A behavior is an action or reaction of a person or an animal in response to an internal or external stimuli. So you get feelings on the inside, you may conduct a behavior, right? you get growlings in your stomach, internal behavior, internal stimuli, external behavior, go eat. External stimuli, you know, somebody offers you food. Internal stimuli, you may eat, you know, behavior may be you eat. Okay, so we're going to talk about it.
And, you know, I could add, Armand, that it's not just an animal or a human. In my view, it's also cellular behavior. We go all the way down to the smallest unit of life. Anything that's alive will display some kind of behavior, even a plant.
Mm-hmm. Okay, but
maybe not.
Can we just stick with humans for a minute? Because we only have 25 minutes today. We got to do more on this, though. Okay, so a behavior. Behaviors can be classified in many ways. Let's look at one simple way, and we're going to relate this to the wolves as well. Primary behavior versus secondary behavior. Roberta, can you tell me the difference between a primary and a secondary?
Sure. A primary behavior is the behavior of someone who is hungry and they eat. So it's a direct, action taking response to a stimulus.
So it is it immediately ends.
Cause and effect, you could say.
It ends the motive. See, so if you have a motive, and it ends the motive by satisfying the motive.
It's a cause and effect. Directly.
Two examples of primary effect are eating and drinking. Eating a sandwich brings an immediate end to the distressful feeling of hunger, unless you're a morte de vomito, which my grandmother used. You know what a morte de vomito is?
Of course I do.
What is that?
It's someone who's always hungry.
But what does it literally mean?
Well, it means dead from hunger.
I thought it meant dying dog. How would you say dying dog?
Well, what are you saying? Morto di fame.
Mortigana.
Oh, no, that is dying dog. Dead dog.
You know, my grandmother used to say, mortigana,
mm-hmm.
meaning that you're eating like a dead dog, or you're eating like a dog who's dying of hunger.
Yeah, like a starving dog,
yeah,
right.
My Irish grandmother.
Uh-huh.
Okay, now, so when drinking a glass of water could bring an immediate end to the stressful feeling of thirst, primary behavior. Opening a milk container, however, is an example of a secondary behavior because the container leads to a primary behavior of drinking the milk.
Right.
So a secondary behavior doesn't end the stimulus.
No.
A secondary behavior leads to a primary behavior which...
Right. The secondary behavior does not lead to anything but a primary behavior if it is successful.
So now we're going to talk about a number of different behaviors, and these go along with psychological jargon. For those of you professionals who are listening, you'll learn a lot from the DSM related to this about how people behave. We're going to talk about operant behavior, escape behavior, avoidance behavior, and hoarding behavior. Four types of behavior that are based on the outcome rather than on the nature of the behavior itself.
The reason why we want to present this information to you is because if you are trying to understand alpha, beta, omega, etc., these classifications of behavior really do help, because really an alpha, being an alpha, being an omega, is defined, but how much of any of these four behaviors classifications that Armand just listed, how much of each one of them you engage in.
That's right.
So
for example, avoidance behavior is not an alpha behavior.
Usually not.
It's not a beta behavior.
Usually not.
No.
Although there's, you know, I think it would be measured by a percentage.
Good.
So an alpha and a beta may engage in avoidance behavior 5%, whereas an omega or a subordinate may engage in avoidance behavior 30%.
Walking away from a foul smell. A person's having a restaurant. They're in a restaurant and they're eating dinner and there's a foul smell comes by and they get up and they walk away. Is that an avoidant behavior?
No, that's an escape behavior.
That's a different behavior.
Right. And maybe the only two where there could be a little confusion are the escape and the avoidance.
Okay, so let's talk about operant behavior.
Let's start with operant, right. An operant behavior is simply doing something to accomplish, to get a reward. And what's the reward? The reward is getting to your goal. If you want to pick up something from the floor and you walk over there and you pick it up and you put it on the table, that's an operant behavior. What's the reward? You've succeeded in accomplishing your goal. Your goal was to pick up that thing from the floor. An operant behavior could be anything that brings to a reward.
So a dog, if you promise a dog that you're going to pet him, if he brings back the ball after you throw it, his running for the ball is an operant behavior. If you promise a dolphin that if he jumps out of the water,
you're
going to give him a fish.
But now you're getting into conditioning. Now you're getting into even a more complex.
But that's called operant conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
So operant is reward seeking. And we've learned over life that you catch a lot of flies with honey.
Yes.
You know what I mean? More than with vinegar. So therefore, being able to reward has become a human way of controlling other people's behaviors by offering rewards.
Right, right, exactly.
One of the ways
you could exploit that tendency.
That's right. And one of the ways
the
alpha offers reward, saying, "Stand back, or I'll rip your heart out. And when you stand back, I will let you eat. See, if you stay back and don't go away, I'll let you have my leftovers."
Mm-hmm.
So there's an operant behavior going on, which is the reward-seeking behavior of the wolf sitting back instead of going for its food. That's an operant behavior. It's reward-seeking. It's reward-seeking. Okay, so let's say...
Well, but there's an art to rewarding.
That's right.
And because rewarding too much could lead to actually a spoiling of the relationship. So it's not like, oh, you just reward. One has to know how to reward not just another member of the group, but even oneself.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we could get into addiction and the whole thing with reward, etc. You know, reward is not as easy as it first appears to be. Reward
right.
is a complex behavior.
Well, so is everything.
So is everything. Okay. So,
let's go.
Just needed to make my statement.
Reward
there.
Operant behavior
the
is
operant
reward.
Behavior, right.
Okay. Escape behavior.
Well, right. The escape is also known as relief. And relief is whenever there is something unpleasant, whether it's a painful stimulus or whether it's a foul odor, whether it's a too loud noise or something, trying to get away from that which is unpleasant is defined as an escape behavior.
You walk into a house and it's too hot when you walk in the door. It's just too hot. You feel like it's almost oppressive. You go and open a window, right? In effect, you're trying to escape
no,
from the behavior.
I would call that an operant behavior, actually. An escape behavior would be...
You're escaping the heat.
But you're... we're going to get...
See, so good. But this is good. This is exactly the problem that scientists have.
Yeah.
Because it sounds simple.
Well, you see, Armand, if you go and open the window, that's the reward, so I see that as an operant behavior. Now, to me, an escape behavior would be... If I know that by going someplace, I'm going to be beaten on the head, I will do everything I can not to go there.
See, are we going to confuse people? Imagine this. Imagine you're at the beach, and the sun is beating down on you, and you decide to jump in the water. Now, what do you call that?
I call that operant.
You don't call that relief.
You're
escaping the heat, right? You're walking across a desert.
Mm-hmm.
And you see a pool to jump in.
I think that in my view, in order to be a relief, there has to be a painful or dangerous or very, very much unpleasant experience, unpleasant stimulus involved. So
what if it's oppressive heat?
You really want to stay with the heat? Okay, Armand.
Okay, so now. No, but I want people to understand how complex it is and how hard it
sure.
is to define.
Sure.
Okay, so let's look at escape behavior You know, we call that escape. Now let's look at avoidant.
You know what's difficult? That all of these things have been defined using lab rats or mice. So
let's leave the mice out of it.
Yeah, it's
because we got the wolves working.
Yeah, I was just saying that's why it can be so confusing.
Well, how would escape behavior be manifest among the alpha, beta, and...
An escape behavior could be if I'm an omega wolf and I know that there's that wolf over there, that beta over there who always bites me, every time I see the beta coming around, I run the other way.
Oh, what if it was avoidant behavior?
That might be avoidance. Okay.
You see what I mean? So there now we have avoidant behavior, which is another kind. It's called the no punishment seeking. And avoidant behavior specifically is the avoidance of punishment.
Right.
Avoidance of punishment.
So what I described just now was an avoidance
That's
behavior
right.
then. See?
Except if it's too hot.
It really
if it's too hot, then you have to open the window.
And it's a relief.
And then it's a relief.
And if the wolf farted, then what?
Oh,
would
you can't say that.
I can't?
Oh,
oh
my
no.
Oh, did you
no, scratch that. Well... Armand, I'm so sorry. All right, well, let's just keep going with the no punishment and no deprivation. The next one is no deprivation, and that's what we call the hoarding behavior. Hoarding behavior is when I know that if I accumulate certain goodies, I will satisfy a need that I may not have right in this moment, but that may come up later. So a hoarding behavior is a behavior whereby I might buy a piece of cake this afternoon and I might put it in the refrigerator and knowing that later on tonight after I get home from work, I might be hungry for that little bit of sweetness and there is my piece of cake. So it's not an immediate reward necessarily, but it's a kind of delayed reward. So that's why it's called a hoarding behavior. And it's also known as the no deprivation behavior.
So how many of these behaviors do you encounter? Do you think you have an escape behavior every day, an operant behavior every day, an avoidant behavior every day, and a hoarding behavior every day? Most probably yes.
I would say
I would you think that
think
an alpha hoards?
That's an interesting
question. You know, he gets a piece of liver. He likes the liver, but he's full.
Right.
You think he takes the liver and he gives it to his wife? Or you think he says, I'm going to save this liver for later?
No, I don't think that the alpha wolf would save the liver for later. No.
He just says, I'll go get another
Because
Ubanga.
I think the alpha knows that wherever there's food, he or she is going to get the best piece.
So hoarding is a very interesting question. About hoarding.
See, that's exactly it, Armand. I think that the different levels of social status is going to determine how much of each of these behaviors a member is going to engage in.
What percentage?
For instance, a lower status member could engage in hoarding behavior more so than an alpha.
So most people, like a man who might be a CEO and he may be in charge of a corporation, he may have money saved in the bank, which you could consider hoarding behavior.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not his primary thing in life. I mean, he may wind up with a lot of money in the bank. You know, he may
Sure.
wind up with lots of money, but he gets paid a lot because he is in control of a group. And the group is happy and rewards his existence.
Right.
But he doesn't have to seek reward because he is automatically rewarded.
Right.
So
right.
there's not much operant behavior.
Mm-hmm.
You know? But he is, you see, it's there. It's all in percentage. So think about your life, my friends, and make this listing. Operant, escape, avoidant, and hoarding. And I want you to write these down. Think about operant, which we said it is immediately,
reward.
It's reward seeking.
Mm-hmm.
And the
escape is relief.
Is relief seeking. Avoidant is avoiding punishment.
Right. And hoarding is avoiding deprivation.
And hoarding is accumulating to avoid deprivation.
Right.
So now which percentage of your time, how much of your time do you spend there? But we're not finished with you. We have other behaviors that we're curious about. There is another one that is called display behaviors. Display behaviors involve exaggerated or stereotyped behaviors combined in a specific set of actions, and these are mainly courtship behaviors.
Or some kind of ritual, right?
No, not all ritual, but it's specifically display behavior relates to courtship.
Well, I'm thinking a stereotyped behavior is something where you have a sequence of, let's say, movements that mean something to the individuals who are watching or participating. So a ritual would fall into that category. I mean, I'm not saying that a courtship does not, but I'm thinking of other things that fall into that description. Well,
Display behavior is about courtship. You're talking about something else. Display behavior is about courtship behavior, and it's a behavior meant in some form to communicate yourself as a viable courtship. So this is a thing that is selected about selecting partners, being selected by partners. Think about your own courtship behaviors. Now, your courtship behaviors could be putting on makeup, could be fixing your hair, could be going out at certain times. How much of your stuff is related to mating? How much of what you do, the way you dress, the way you are, how much of it could be related to courtship behavior? Another kind of behavior we have is called...
Alarm behavior?
Alarm behavior. That's a very interesting thing. That's when you throw the clock against the wall early in the morning.
The first thing that comes to mind there is when you look at a deer and they get nervous and they start to stomp their feet on the ground, that's their way of communicating to their members of their group that there could be danger nearby. And it's funny because the one who is in charge of sounding the alarm, if you've ever seen a deer displaying this kind of behavior, they are so still. They almost look frozen in the picture. They don't move anything except that foot. And that foot may stomp, you know, half a dozen times or even more, and then all of a sudden, boom, they disappear and they're gone.
You know, a very good example of it, it's great, Roberta, alarm behaviors, you know, in a wolf pack, and this is beautifully described in the film that we were talking about, there will be one of the subordinate wolves, not the beta wolf, is going to be the one who's on guard at all times.
Well, actually, it's usually the omega.
And it's the omega.
The omega is usually the one that sounds the alarm. The omega is usually the one who is nervous and restless and pacing and always, maybe scared at the least sound.
The
or
Woody
noise.
Allen, the Woody Allen of the crowd, you know, the kind of nervous nilly behavior. So the alarm behavior is It shows signs of, and it's necessary. You need to have this around. You need to have somebody around who's going to be sensitive to anything going wrong. Nervous Nellies. And you all know people like that. You know people who worry all the time. That's alarm behavior. There are alarmists, right? People who alarm.
You know, Armand, what's interesting is if you take any group of any living thing, after a while, even if you put together a group of people who've never met before or a group of animals who've never met before, even different species, I think after a while you start to see that every member of the group takes on one of these roles. And it's almost like the group itself develops around these behaviors. There is always a need for a leader, for an alarm sounder, for a guardian, for a peacemaker. These roles are so ingrained in the social structure that they will be chosen and they will be displayed anytime you look at any kind of group or community or association of individuals, even if they're strangers and you put them together.
And it's not only, I think it's what you're saying is accurate, Roberta. We all have every one of these behaviors.
Right.
Where is my alarm level set? I have been through a lot of life. In my many years, there is very few things that I fear. There are very few things that if they happen, they're going to make me panic. However, if I hear a sound in a dishwasher that sounds wrong, I'm going to jump up quick because I know that dishwasher could break because something is in it that's hitting against something that could hit something else, and I know I may have to fix a dishwasher. If I hear certain sounds, right, air conditioning sounds, sounds around my office, there are things I'm aware of that strike off an alarm, and I'll respond immediately, but not necessarily nervously, but it is alarming in my mind. Other people could ignore it. There are smells. I'm very sensitive to smells, as I know you are, too. There's a smell that tells me alarm. Most people who don't have that sensitive a nose, they don't sense it, you know?
See, Armand, what I think is really interesting is that when you put a group of people together, let's say a group of people who've never met before, how do they determine who is going to be the alpha, who is going to be the beta, who is going to be the omega? Because eventually, give them enough time together, you'll find that after a while you come back to the group of people that you've put together, you'll find that there is a leader, that there is a scapegoat, that, you know, these roles emerge out of social interactions and structures. So I think that each one of us has a percentage of all these potentials. And then depending on where we are, what the conditions are, you know, what else is going on, depending on a number of factors, we are going to, if we are in a group and if we function within the group, we're eventually going to take on the role that best suits us based on our innate tendencies.
There are two more behaviors I want to quickly mention. One is comfort behaviors. Now, these are behaviors that involve grooming movements that suggest, indicate a sense of satisfaction. Could be the washing behaviors. You know, when a cat licks itself, that's a grooming behavior. That's a comfort behavior. The behavior type also indicates all is well in the area. Preening movements, animals taking care of each other. So that's called comfort behavior. And another is called play behavior. Now, this is, of course, we know exactly what play behavior is. It is play. It is carefree. Think of yourself, my friends. Here's what Roberta is saying. You're an alpha male. You're an alpha female. You're a beta. You're anybody, right? And you're in charge of having alarm behavior. Your alarm behaviors are running at 20%. You don't feel much comfort because you're working all day long. You fall asleep in your car when you get home at night. You know, you can't even get in the last door. You have a whole bunch of other behaviors that you're going through all the time. You have your courtship behaviors because you want to make sure you look good in case, you know, you want your mate to be appealing or you want to attract a mate. You have all of these things. You have operant conditioning. You have operant behavior, escape behavior, avoidance behavior, hoarding behavior. You got to save your money because you got to pay the bill next month. The tax guy is coming. Then you go on vacation. Now you put all that aside. Now you only want to do play behavior and hoarding behavior and operant behavior. But you want to let go of.
But if you were on a cruise ship and something should happen, that there's a need for emergency action.
Right.
And if you are an alpha, you will immediately take on the role of a leader and you will lead people onto the lifeboat.
Right.
Whereas if you are something else, you might...
Wait, Roberta, can I let people be on vacation for a minute? Yeah. Just a minute.
I know. You know what I think?
You know what I'm... I know we're running out of time.
You're trying to make a point, and I'm trying to make another point.
Now, that point is a good point, but I wanted to let just them end on vacation.
Sure.
Without being hit by a kamikaze suddenly hitting your cruise ship.
Well, because what I wanted to get across is that these are ways in which members of a group function in harmony with the other members of the group, and that without these boundaries of behavior, the group would be into chaos all the time.
Let me put you back on vacation, friends.
Okay.
Before chaos, okay? Before having something crisis happen to you while you're on your ship, keep in mind, no matter what your behaviors are, you can relax. You could go into your comfort behavior. You could go into your play behavior, like we're doing now. You could play. You could take it easy. You could drop your alarms, because they always sit somewhere in the background. And that's what Roberta's saying. And if you had to pick it up, you'd have to pick it up. But what people do nowadays, and the whole idea of vacation, is to switch your behaviors around so that you could have one or another that rejuvenates you. There is so much more about this that we would like to bring with you. We had to start a little late today. The next time we're on air together, we will definitely bring you more. This is Armand DeMille with Roberta Maria Atti. Amazing stuff, Roberta, huh? It's exciting. We have endless, endless stuff to bring with you. I want to thank you for being with me, Roberta. If people wanted to get... Today it may be hard to get a copy of this show. You might have to call my office to find out how. That's 212-757-4488. Internet. Right?
Right. That's my website.
And they could taste your nut milk.
Right.
And, ooh, terrific stuff. Got to find out about that, my friends. Helps you. We'll be back with you tomorrow. Well, I don't know if we'll be back with you tomorrow. Tomorrow's an interesting day. If the hearings are here, we won't be on. If the hearings are not here, we will be on. Who knows? Back with you soon, my friends. Love to all of you. Thank you so much. Thank you, Michael, for all of our alarm behavior that turned into grooming behavior and so on and so forth.